We will start today with Venki Balasubramanian, co-founder and CEO of Plivo. Plivo is an Indian company that has taken off really greatly, and Venki has a fabulous story. So given that we have a huge Indian audience here, I invited Venki to come and inspire the audience. Welcome, Venki.
Hey, thanks, Rana.
So Venki, let's kind of introduce our audience to your business, yourself, a little bit of what are you doing with the company?
Sure, yeah. I'll start with a quick round of intro and then kind of get to what we do as a business. So I'm one of the founders of the company. Been in telecom for over 10 years now with various different functions. I have a development background and now day-to-day I oversee a lot of business aspects of the company, along with my co-founder, Mike. We founded Plivo in 2011. And what we essentially do is, we are an API for businesses to be able to kind of integrate SMS and voice functionality into their mobile and web apps. So for example, a lot of these mobile apps or mobile messaging apps which you install today, essentially, they want to verify your phone number even before you start using them, right? Because we are seeing this shift away from usernames to your phone number being your identity. We actually power a lot of these apps on your mobile phones to verify, or for them to verify you guys via SMS and voice globally. I can name them. Some of these are pretty large names, names which are huge brands, but I can't name them on this call right now, but we power a lot of these apps globally.
How did you come up with this idea? How did you know to go after this problem? Is this something you had seen in your job as a telecom engineer before?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Actually, when we started back in 2011, we were more focused on the traditional market or traditional telecom use case, which was the call centers, the IVRs. That's where our background is. Both Mike and I come from this traditional call center background, right, where we work with companies like that. So we actually started back with Plivo's focus being on in that traditional market. But in over the last 3-4 years, I mean, and you must have seen as well, there has been such a huge growth and shift in the market where, mobile is kind of coming to the foreground. And the traditional telecom market seems to be growing a lot slower. So we've started seeing more and more of these web and mobile apps being kind of in the forefront than your traditional telecom space. And which is where we see a lot more shift in the market. And we see a lot of these companies, mobile web companies using us for different use cases. And the use case which I mentioned to you, the verification, that was just one out of them.
Now, you built this company with very little financing. Tell us a little bit of how you have, put one foot before the other to achieve such a capital efficient execution on the business.
Yeah, sure. This was back in 2011. Like I said, we started out in 2011 more as an open source hobby project initially for the first half. And then second half, we got a bit serious. We had a lot of customers come in from the open source hobby project. From the open source hobby project, more from a consulting point of view. That's when we realized, there is a real business to this. We want to put more time and effort into making sure we kind of set this up as a real business, incorporated in the U.S., kind of got our initial first few customers. We went profitable. It's hard to hear that term these days, but we kind of went profitable back in 2011. It was easy also because it was just Mike and I, working out of our apartments. And
you were doing consulting projects on your open source code, essentially, and that's what got you the cash.
Yeah, so we kind of transitioned there. So open source consulting project initial first half. And then once we kind of registered our business, a couple of these customers came up to us and said, we want to be your cloud customers. Would you build something for us? And we'll pay you $1,000. And we were like, yeah, wow, sure, why not? right? And that's where we got our first initial set of customers who were paying us, you know, $20,000 to $30,000 a month. And that was enough for us to kind of get profitable with a two-member team. So we've been in this mix of bootstrapped, you know, funding, and then profitable kind of a mode. So early 2011, we were in this bootstrap mode where we had a couple of customers. Then we went into this mode of, you know, we said, okay, you know what, we got our initial bootstrap customers, and we had a lot of interest from a few key angel investors who wanted to kind of come in and help us early on, not just with money, but also with a lot of advice and their networking stuff. So we kind of took, you know, convertible notes or our seed round initially, which was about, you know, $250,000. This was our first seed round in 2011, which obviously gave us a little bit of impetus to kind of go hire our initial set of folks and kind of scale out from there. Early 2012, we were part of Y Combinator. We applied to YC and you know, they saw, we were not expecting a call, but we kind of got called for an interview in the Bay Area, and then we kind of were part of the YC. Even till then, we were kind of early beta, private beta mode. During July 2012 is when we actually launched publicly. And this is when TechCrunch actually kind of covered us. There was a good amount of, you know, market focus. And primarily, you know, what we realized is when you start out small, you have to have some kind of focus there. In terms of markets, I mean, going all out, you know, trying to focus on everyone could get you focusing on no one. So we did that. We focused on in the U.S. markets initially. A lot of our business focus in 2012 was voice. When I say voice, you know, our users were building applications and they were using us for integrating voice functionality, right? So making that voice call for different use cases in their app or in their mobile app, in their web app or mobile app, right? So that's what happened in 2012. We saw a lot of growth once we went public, public as in like public launch. So and in the later part of the year 2012, we got a good amount of interest from you know, angels, VCs. This was after our demo day in YC, Y Combinator, and we said, you know, it's probably strategic for us to kind of go raise, but we want to do that on a convertible note kind of a method. So we did that in late 2012. This was a larger raise, but again, a seed round convertible note of $1.75 million. So totally, you know, we had raised about $2 million by then.
But all convertible notes, you've had $2 million of convertible notes, essentially.
That's right. All of it was a convertible note.
So I want to probe a couple of points that you talked about in this, you know, journey so far. How did you play the India Silicon Valley, you know, geographies in your journey? If I recall, you started in India, right?
Yeah. We actually started our first hires were in India, but you know, both Mike and I were remote, so he was in France. And I was in India, and then we moved to the U.S. As a part of Y Combinator, both of us. So we had, at this point, we had two offices. We had a few hires in India, and then we had an office in San Francisco in the Bay Area. And that office was just Mike and I.
And the first angel financing was from India or from Valley?
The first one was from India, yes. But it was for the U.S. entity. So the way we structured, so let me kind of give you some more detail here, right, how we did this. So essentially what we did was, you know, day one we realized our market is going to be the U.S. market. It's not going to be, you know, an Indian market. So we incorporated in the U.S. As a Delaware C Corp. And then whatever rounds of money we raised, whether it be in India or U.S., we kind of raised in the U.S. entity, right? Although that said, our first round of financing was in India from a key set of angel investors, which luckily we kind of got to pick. But the money raised was in the U.S. entity, and then you know, our first few hires were in India as well, right? In fact, the first seven hires were in India, right? All of them were engineers working on building the product and releasing that. So how did we, you know, use that advantage or this setup for us to our advantage? You know, I think it, one of the key reasons we've been able to grow the company and be profitable and to scale the way we've scaled it is because of having this setup where, you know, we've had India, Silicon Valley kind of setup. Because, I mean, it's, things have changed in India right now, but in 2011, you know, there were not too many startups here in India, but there is a lot of good talent available here. You know, there is an abundant pool of talent here where, you know, hiring was much more easier in 2011 compared to now. 2015, 16 has been hard. There are tons and tons of, you know, startups you're competing with and with the likes of Flipkart and all of these other guys, right? But back then, you know, it was much more easier for us to kind of hire our first 10, 15 developers, world-class developers, right? Like from the likes of, you know, Amazon, Yahoo, Microsoft, Google. Who would not want to just work on one large product without knowing what they're doing, but be a part of an early startup team and kind of be able to, you know, contribute to your features and knowing how it impacts the business, right? So own things end to end. So that was one of the keys, right? We got the best of the pool of talent having our team in India. And we kind of built out a business team in the Valley in San Francisco. So we have our marketing and sales in San Francisco, and even today our engineering, a good part of support, and a lot of our other back-end teams are based out of India. So we've kind of leveraged that pretty aggressively. Now we are profitable, but at that point when we were growing out, you know, if we had our team in the Bay Area alone, it would have been much harder to hire. So that's where I think our advantage came in.
Definitely. And it's also very expensive. The Bay Area engineering talent is very, very expensive.
Oh, for sure. And it's getting worse. I probably think it's going to change this year, but it's just getting worse day by day.
So, folks, those of you who are listening, you may recall if you were here last week or have listened to the recording, we had Sasha Mirchandani from K Capital in India, small early stage fund, last week, who said kind of the same thing, is that all Indian investors actually are reconciled with the fact that B2B businesses out of India are more or less structured to be global businesses. These businesses don't scale very fast in India. As a result, both the entrepreneurs and the investors tend to want the companies to be based in, you know, either Silicon Valley or somewhere else in the U.S. and facing global growth rates, essentially, taking advantage of global growth rates. So you would be best positioned to do this kind of business by incorporating your companies in the U.S., and raise, even if you raise money in India, the Indian investors are completely aware of the fact that you're going to be building a global company and they will be investing in the U.S. entity, which is what Venki has done, and it has worked very well for him. So, Venki, the other question I wanted to double-click down on is Y Combinator. It's, you know, you said you moved to the U.S. to work with Y Combinator. What was that experience like? What did you get out of it? And is this something that you recommend to other Indian and entrepreneurs who are working in your mode?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's a good question. In fact, you know, we actually were planning to come to the U.S. and move there, and, both Mike and I, but it was supposed to be later a part of 2012. YC, what that did is just get us there like 6 months earlier. Would I recommend it? Absolutely. I think it's been very helpful in terms of you know, coming from both Mike and I, we are first-time founders and we had no experience, you know, doing a startup, building, like you said, a B2B market, you know, focused on in the U.S., early growth market. But so many things are just new the first time, right? Like there's sales, there's marketing, there's product development, customer support, all these functions sometimes. You know, it helps when you can get, like, advice, and you see other companies doing it, right? So those 3 months for us were absolutely fantastic. You get the best set of, you know, folks you work with, both as mentors and then peers, right? There are so many good companies who are your peers, and you compete with them in the same room, and also share a lot of instances of what's happening with different companies, and they go on to become pretty good friends of yours, moving out of that program, right? So it's not just about being part of that program for the for essentially the structure itself, but a lot of things, good things come out of it. A lot of people have asked me before, should I do YC for the money? I don't think so, because the money is basically not too much, in terms of the amount itself. But I would do YC for the sake of, a lot of network they give you, the professional advice they give you. You get to kind of meet a lot of other companies who are in a similar situation. And you realize that there is no need for you to have done, two, three, four, five companies before for you to come and do what you're doing at this scale right now, right? So yeah, absolutely recommended if you want to apply to YC.
Y Combinator, by the way, the time when you did Y Combinator, the amount of money was much smaller than what it is now. You were more in that 15K to 20K kind of phase, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what it was, and we were actually the second company to be in YC from India. There was another company called Interview Street. They were part of YC before, but we were a second company. It was still new for Indian companies to apply to YC and get through. So we were super excited. But yeah, I mean the money was much lower, but the kind of exposure it gave us.
But the money the money today that Y Combinator gives you is not as low. It's 120K, I think, for 7 to 10% of equity. Or 7% of equity, which I think is a much better deal than it was before from a money point of view, pure money point of view.
Yeah, I agree. It's a higher number. I think they've evolved as well over the period of time. But and like you said, it's a higher number. But again, I mean, if you just want, if you're just looking out for capital, there are much better deals out there in the market.
The caveat there, however, is that Y Combinator, when they started, they were doing much earlier stage companies. And today, because of the level of competition that has kicked into getting into Y Combinator, the application process of getting into Y Combinator, you almost have to have done quite a lot of incubation work on your own or bootstrapping work on your own before you would be able to get into Y Combinator. So I think in your case, the fact that you already had something going, you had customers, you had a product of some sort that you could then, develop into a business that was already a business, all that goes a long way. And I think the philosophy that we follow in 1 million by 1 million is that no matter who your investor is or who your equity style accelerator is, whether it's Y Combinator or Techstars, there are only a few really good ones that will give you money, take equity, and give you exposure to their networks in a meaningful way, and they have meaningful networks. The competition to get into those is very high, so you're going to need to bootstrap your way into a place where you differentiate, and for them, you are an attractive investment. Remember, these accelerators are equity model companies. They're essentially funds. These Y Combinator Techstars, these are essentially venture funds, and their returns are dependent on how well you're going to do and how well their equity investment in you is going to do. So that's just commentary on the scenario. Going back to your story, what I find absolutely fascinating is that you are what, about 10 million annual revenue run rate at this point?
Actually, much more, but we don't disclose the numbers. And not even run rate from a pure revenue perspective, annual revenue perspective.
Let's just say you're more than 10 million in revenue, annual revenue, and you only have $2 million worth of angel financing in form of convertible notes. So there has been almost no dilution in the company except the equity you gave to Y Combinator. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. That's correct. And in fact, a couple of things. What you mentioned before this question, I think that's really good advice for everyone starting out a company, right? you know, before applying, you know, to any accelerator or kind of going in fundraising out there, it's very important to kind of be, you know, aware of what you're doing, build that product out, have some kind of progress, you know, have a product market fit so that you understand what you're doing is already there in the space, and then it becomes much easier for you to kind of go pitch to some of these guys out there, right? I think that's a great piece of advice. And yeah, I mean, coming back to this question, it's you know, essentially just YC, us founders and the team members. We give out good stock options to team members as well. So yeah, so team members as well. Yes, that's what it is.
So Venky, what does the competitive landscape look like for you? And how are you competing?
Sure, good question. So, I mean, if you look at APIs, especially in voice and SMS, still a very early stage. There are you know, maybe a few companies in this space in who we, you know, encounter, and in a lot of our deals we kind of work on in B2B space. One of them is Twilio. You know, they're a company founded much earlier than us. They were founded in 2008. And then another company we come across in a lot of these deals is Nexmo. And Twilio, I believe, is founded in San Francisco as well. Nexmo is a European company. You know, they were, I think, founded the same year as us. So, yeah, I mean, these are two companies we kind of come across in a lot of these deals. Mm-hmm. Like I said, yeah, this is still an early market, so we should see you know, maybe more companies pop up, but we obviously have, you know, all three of us have some head start in this space.
So when you encounter them in deals, how do you win these deals?
Yeah.
What is your positioning to win against these companies?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think, there are two ways to look at it, right? Like from a marketing perspective, you can have a generic standpoint in terms of what your differentiation is. But what we realize is when you talk to these customers, essentially being a platform, they can use you in so many different ways that, you know, there could be different differentiators for different markets, right, or different verticals. So, for example, you know, if you're looking at some of these user verification apps where they want to verify your number, you know, the time is very sensitive. They're essentially using you for a customer acquisition use case, right? So mm-hmm. if you fail, they fail to acquire a customer. So quality becomes super essential, you know, in them sending out that message, SMS to your phone, and you being getting that SMS within 10, 15 seconds, right? And try doing that globally, that becomes a huge challenge. So quality is the first thing we encounter in some of these use cases. And I mean, it's not just a pitch we pitch with. They're free to test, right? It's pay as you go. All these companies are out there. They can just kind of, you know, sign up and start testing, and they would know the results in a day or two. So typically, you know, that's our pitch. We say all our products are out there. Quality is a key for us for your use cases. Please feel free to go test out there. And it's not something we're just putting in marketing slides, right? The second, which is key, a lot of these companies scale, and they scale to you know, hundreds and millions of users, right? So when you scale, quality is great, but then you know, it kind of starts adding up as a cost as well. So you have to be competitive from a cost perspective. So what we've done is we've kind of gone ahead and worked with a lot of carriers, when I say carriers, telecom guys like, you know, British Telecom, AT&T, Vodafone, all of these guys. We've partnered with a lot of these carriers across the globe directly, cut out all the middlemen in between, because of which, obviously, one, we've been able to improve quality, but two, also come up with like a competitive pricing structure. So when these companies scale, you know, they get that advantage, and it's not a huge cost addition from their perspective to add a new user, right? So these are two key reasons we win a lot of deals. And then apart from this, we have a fabulous customer support. And I think it's super critical that it's not just about having just a product out there. It's how you treat your customers, how you ensure they kind of become your evangelist going forward. And you know, it's not about just answering questions to your customers. You have to wow them, right, with the user experience, with the product, but also when they reach out to your support team for questions and stuff. That's your chance to kind of wow those customers, and they become your evangelist to kind of go spread the word.
And what are the key levers of growth today, given where you are?
Yeah, sure. You know, we've been kind of going decently. We've been doubling for the last, you know, couple of years. And this is in high millions of dollars annual revenue every year. So initially for 2 years, it was a much higher growth rate when we were lower revenue rate, right? So for us, you know, we realized that a lot of our sales has been in them. Marketing has been super critical, right? I think it's been a key lever where we've had a lot of inbound traffic coming into our site with us being leveraging, you know, organic, inorganic sources of traffic. In fact, paid or inorganic paid traffic came in pretty late, but organic traffic was a key lever for us. We realized that there are specific pain points in the market where customers tend to come online and search for. So that's been a huge lever in making sure that we kind of capture that traffic on our side, and then you know, make sure we fine tune site traffic to conversion, right? Where we get in front of the customer right away with the right piece of info in terms of what they're looking for. So I think inbound marketing is one key thing one should focus on. In fact, like I said, both Mike and I are devs, and this is our first startup, so we did not have a lot of idea of inbound marketing when we started this, but one piece of advice to all of you guys would be to kind of you know, focus on inbound marketing for a good bit of it, unless you are doing, you know, a product which is in upwards of $20,000-$30,000 a month kind of to a B2B market. But if you do in the B2B space, you know, in the typical SaaS area, between, you know, $100 to $1,000 of revenue per month per customer, I would really recommend you spend some time on this. Either learn yourself and be able to do this, maybe not and be an expert, but know what you're doing, or get somebody early on in your team to kind of spend time on that. I think a lot of companies fail not because they don't have good products, but they're not able to market themselves correctly. So that's one key lever. And second has been customer referrals. So we've got a good amount of customer referrals, you know, from existing guys, and then they send, you know, similar kind of businesses because of them having this feel that they like what we've provided them on our infrastructure today. So I think these two things have been our key levers. And now we're starting to focus and expand our sales team as well, and do start doing more and more direct sales to larger B2B companies. But that's much later. We do a lot of conferences. We have, you know, booths and all of that stuff. But that's only in the third or fourth year. You know, first few years, we were just focused on making sure we have a lot of inbound traffic, and we make sure we optimize and convert a lot of that.
And last question. Your competitor, Twilio, for instance, is a unicorn. And, of course, we are kind of swept up in this unicorn mania, and it's starting to – we're starting to see the bubble burst. How do you view this whole, you know, ruckus around the unicorn phenomenon? How do you interpret it? How do you react to it, et cetera?
Yeah, sure. So specifically about Twilio, I have I don't have many comments there. I think you must have heard as well in the market that they're planning to go public soon, so we will see how that goes. In terms of the market overall, a lot of these companies are so-called unicorns. A lot of these companies deserve it. I mean, in terms of how they have built that revenue out, profit out, have their growth cycles. But there are a lot of these companies which are not there in terms of numbers. It's just been more of like market, if not high, but, a lot of VCs, a lot of fundraising at like much higher numbers, but we are clearly seeing a market correction, like you said, late half of last year and early this year. I'm a firm believer that we see a lot more of that in the coming year, coming part of the year, where you will see a lot of these companies come down to their actual valuations and not being able to keep those estimates they've given to venture capitalism and the numbers they've raised funds on. But there are a few companies in there which probably deserve to be in there because of their actual numbers, but not all of them, right? I'm a firm believer, and we would see some of these things kind of pan out. I mean, if you look at the tech industry earlier this year, a lot of these companies, especially public companies, are down like 30-40% in the market, including big names like Twitter, right? So So yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how things pan out later this year.
So folks, those who are listening, I'll give you a little, and many of you have read a lot of my commentary on this topic. I've written extensively. There are real unicorns, and then there are pseudo-unicorns. So the real unicorns are the ones who have the fundamentals to actually sustain valuation of the levels that they're getting, and the pseudo-unicorns are based on, you know, overvalued, overhyped financing rounds, and they cannot sustain those valuations. And then you may have read my series, From Unicorn to Unicorps. There is a whole bunch of companies that are turning into unicorps as they encountered the public market and so on and so forth. So the reason I continuously showcase case studies like Clevo and Venky's story is because you are going to be a lot more successful, you're going to create a lot more wealth, and you're going to build sustainable companies in the mode in which Venky is building Clevo. You will, if you can stay true to the fundamentals, even if it's a little bit slower, if you can, you know, get slowly and steadily $200 million in revenue and manage your company within reasonable amounts of capital, you will be making a lot more money. You will have good, solid, sustainable exits, whether it's an IPO or otherwise. And that is a better way, in my opinion, to build businesses than getting ahead of the market in terms of valuations and then crashing and burning with it because you cannot deliver on the fundamentals. This, I would say, is a core philosophy of the 1 million by 1 million program. It is not a core philosophy of Y Combinator or Techstars at all. Those guys are very much in the Silicon Valley unicorn mania mode. So very often you will get fed a lot of, you know, financing when you don't need to get fed that much financing. A more disciplined approach would make you more successful. A few sessions back, I think it was probably in December, a friend of mine was here on the show. His name is Ashmit Sidana. He's now founded his own venture capital fund. He used to be at Foundation Capital before. You may want to look up the discussion we had about financing strategy, and he used a very good metaphor that financing is like drugs. Revenues, profits, customers, these are like vitamins and proteins, things that make your business grow in a healthy way. Financing is like drugs. You take a little bit, it's okay. If you get out of control, then you're going to become an addict and your life is going to fall apart, and the same way the business is going to go completely out of control. So keep that analogy in mind. Venky, thank you for sharing your marvelous